I'm trying to sort of count.
We are missing, I believe, Senator Lang yet in terms of council members. And let's see. I think. I think also Wade Johnson from DNR.
He may join us later, since he's not first on the agenda.
But other than that.
I let Wade in.
Oh, thank you, Sandy.
Okay. So I think we're ready. I will call this.
Oh, one moment. I'm waiting to get the handoff from Julius that we're streaming.
Okay.
So I'll let you know as soon as I get a go from him. Okay, we're good to go.
All right. So I'll call the meeting of the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council to order by this wonderful Zoom platform. Thank you all for attending. Meeting is being held in accordance with the memo dated April 21st, 2020 from the LCC chair and vice chair regarding commission meetings being held remotely. A couple of things to remember, remain muted unless you want to speak. It'll make it easier for everyone else. And we will be using a roll call for the voting. Everyone should have been the link that was sent to you as well as the website. All right, so the first order of business is to review and approve the any discussion? Let's have a roll call vote.
All right. Chair Hartwell.
Yes.
Hartwell votes aye. Vice Chair Shara. Shara?
Ron, get off mute. We don't hear you, Ron. Just move on.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Aye.
Becker-Finn votes aye. Eggerling.
Aye.
Eggerling votes aye. Fabian. Representative Fabian, could you repeat that vote?
Fabian votes aye.
Fabian votes aye. Holston.
Aye.
Holston votes aye. McNamara.
Aye.
McNamara votes aye. Peters.
Aye.
Peters votes aye. Saxhog.
Aye.
Saxhog votes aye. Swenson.
Aye.
Swenson votes aye. Senator Tomassoni. Senator Tomassoni, could aye. You repeat that vote? Tomassoni votes aye. Shira?
Aye.
Shira votes aye. Total of 11 ayes and one not present.
All right, next order of business is to review and approve the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Don't move, McNamara.
Any discussion, comments, corrections? Let's vote.
Hartwell.
Aye.
Hartwell votes aye. Shara.
Aye.
Shara votes aye. Representative Becker Finn.
Aye.
Becker Finn votes aye. Eggerling.
Aye.
Eggerling votes aye. Representative Fabian.
Fabian votes aye.
Fabian votes aye. Holston.
Aye.
Holston votes aye. Lang. Oh, apologies. Lang is not present. McNamara.
Aye.
McNamara votes aye. Peters.
Aye.
Peters votes aye. Saxhog.
Aye.
Saxhog votes aye. Swenson.
Aye.
Swenson votes aye. Senator Tomasoni.
Aye.
Senator Tomasoni votes aye. 11 ayes, one not present.
All right, so anyone have any conflicts they want to report on today's agenda? All right, my comments. I have, you know, a couple of comments for you. We're going to have a discussion, obviously, about...
Mr. Chair, this is Dan Fabian. I got a text message from Senator Andrew Lang, and his whatever format, whatever platform he's on, says that it's waiting for Amanda to let him in or something. Let me go back and check the text message here. Mine says, waiting for Amanda.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Mr. Chair, members, he just showed up in the waiting room, so I'll let him in now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No problem. All right, well, I'm just gonna go. We're obviously gonna have a discussion about hearings, which will be interesting. We did send out a note asking people for opinions, and we got a couple. There's no agreement. So we'll have an interesting discussion on that, on how we do this. One of the things that I picked up yesterday is that we have always, as a council, rotated how we do roll call votes instead of going in order. And Amanda obviously didn't know that in the past. There was a comment at the last meeting that people weren't ready to vote because this is an interesting format. But it seems to me that our strategy in the past of rotating the order of vote means that no one has the cleanup vote and no one has to vote first every time. And unless there's an objection, I'd like to go back to that strategy, not for this meeting, but for future meetings. We'll just do it in alphabetical order and move the order down the chart every time we do a vote so that Ron Shearer doesn't always vote last. Are there any objections to going back to the way we've always done it?
So Mr. Chairman Tomasoni.
Yep.
I don't have any objections. I actually wasn't even aware that we were doing that. But if people don't want to vote, they can always pass, and they can come back to them afterwards. So I think the order of voting isn't very important. If a person's not ready to vote, they can just pass.
So is it okay with you if we just change the order each time and let people pass if they want to?
I don't care. I don't think it matters.
That's just been our practice. So we'll go back to our practice. The other thing is, I don't know how many of you have seen the exchange that's gone on with the Rosso Lake project, which we approved in, I think, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, 2016, and they appeared in front of us late last year, early this year, asking us to take away or not extend the money, and we extended the money anyhow. They have now launched a fairly aggressive campaign to try to influence a decision so that that project does not go forward. Mark and I have spent some time sending them information and sending the paper information just to clarify what our position is. All those documents are available if anyone has a question, but essentially it is an approved appropriation. Our money was for purchase of fee property for easements, but the majority was for restoration. This concerns a drained lake, shallow lake, and the folks up there did not like the fact that we continued the project and continue to not like that. It is an approved appropriation, so there's very little that we really don't have any role in it. If they chose to see action taken, it would have to be a legislative action. We can't renege on an appropriation that's been approved by the legislature anyhow, which is essentially what we've told them. They're maintaining that money is fungible, and if someone decided to use eminent domain on a portion of the project, they wouldn't use our money. They just shift our money to somewhere else. And we obviously have no control over what other people do with other pots of money, only with our own. And I'm not sure, frankly, if eminent domain is even on the table. But it is an issue that has had some play, and Mark can fill you in on any other details. But we did hear them, and part of the issue is they sort of have intimated that we haven't been very accessible, which we have been very accessible. So I just wanted to alert everyone to that. And those are really the only comments that I have, unless you have any questions for me. If not, we'll move on to Mark's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we're on that issue with regards to Roseau Lake, I'll just let you know that I have heard back from the editors of the Thief River Times. The Roseau, well, Thief River and Roseau are the same editor for the two papers. So I've heard back from him, as well as the Grand Forks Herald. They'll be running our letter to the editor up there with some corrective information in it. As the chair mentioned, there was articles in the papers up there that had provided some very misleading information from this group, and we're just trying to correct the record for that.
Mr. Chair, it's McNamara. I have a question or a point to make. You want me to go ahead?
Sorry, I muted myself. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify, you made a couple of points to say they or their. That's a couple of affected property owners. It's not the project proposer that you're talking about. Just so people understand, it's not the project proposer that's asked to have the money withdrawn. It's a couple of nearby producers, farmers, that are the ones that have raised the questions. Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification. I should have made that clear, but I appreciate that you did.
Very good point. Thank you, Danny. Members, also just a couple of other things, just to reiterate some things that have happened here in the last several weeks. In your in the materials for today's meeting, there was an email letter that went out from us, from staff, to the counties of Minnesota, and along with that was a big spreadsheet. That was as we do annually, it's statutory direction that we send a letter to each of the counties with a list of projects that are received in the spring. and also defining within that which ones are fee title acquisition that may take place in their county or that have projections for that activity in those counties. So we did that. We did get one letter back. I should also mention that we also went a little bit further. We put in also what were the what projects were doing enhancement, restoration, or easement activities within each county as well. We did get one letter back as a result of that. That came from Renville County. That was copied out to the members, and it's also in the packet today. And then I just dropped them a letter of thanks for their comments. Renville also sent us a letter last year. That was very nice of them. It's nice to know what they're thinking and what they wish. There are two invitations that I just wanted to draw your attentions to from nonprofits as well as and the DNR. The first was a dedication that's coming up for Dr. Frenzel and Dr. Daniel Frenzel and Virginia Frenzel. That one looks similar to this, or looks like this, but that is coming up actually this Saturday on the 8th and near Kimball, Minnesota. And then there's also the Gary Clancy Wildlife Management Area dedication that's coming up on August 19th. And that one is down by Mankato or Garden City. So council members should know that you are invited to go to those if you wish, and that your attendance at those would be a reimbursable expense. The Chair Hartwell had mentioned the letters and everything. So the letters and articles and emails that you've been getting, you've been copied on recently, those should, if you haven't found them already, they're in your email box regarding the Roseau Lake restoration and all of that conversation going on up there. And Mr. Chair, that's all I have for right now.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Dan.
Yeah, so with regards to the Roseau Lake project, obviously that's in, well, almost literally in my backyard, but not quite. and to Member McNamara's point about a couple of farmers, it's actually grown to be quite a large group. I'm not sure what the number is of people who are opposed to it. I continue to have faith in the Roseau River Watershed District. Again, these are some of our former students of mine. They worked very hard to put a project together. I'm not going to begin to suggest that it's perfect and so forth, but I do think that it's important that in terms of the communications that Mark Johnson, Director Johnson, is referring to make sure that the members get all of that, including, Mark, have you finished the letter to the editor and has it been sent to us? I apologize, I've been traveling the last couple of days, so I haven't been keeping very close track of my email.
Yes, Representative Fabian, the letter the editor has copied to you.
Okay, and then I have met with some of the people who are part of the group who are opposed to it. And I understand some of their concerns, I do, but you know, we've not been able to come to an agreement on how to best move forward between us. I'm not going to not back the project. There might be some revisions to it. And in terms of eminent domain, I don't know that the Watershed District has ever actually started anything with eminent domain. And I don't even know if they've had conversations about it, but it has been mentioned by other people. That's an option that's available to them. I'm hoping that as the project moves forward, that communication can continue to be open between the two sides and that they can come to some sort of an agreement on what would be the best project there. So, and back to the point that Chair Hartwell made about the project and the funding, that would require legislative action. And I found it interesting that the lawyer that they hired sent a letter to the council asking us to do, in essence, to reverse the funding. And it would have seemed to me that someone who's experienced in this area would have recognized that the appropriate place to go would be to, you know, the legislature, the governor, the House, and the Senate. So thank you.
Great, thank you. Mark has provided a clear line of communication, and we'll continue to do so, I'm confident, on this issue. But our role is really pretty secondary at this point. Are there any other comments, questions for Mark? If not, let's move into item six, restoration evaluation report. Wade, are you going to take that? Wade, are you here?
Yes.
There you are.
And members, you can see my face at least momentarily here. Thank you for having us. I'm going to start sharing my screen with the presentation, and I will start from there. Thank you. Hopefully this works. Okay, welcome. Good morning, Chair Hartwell and Council members. Wade Johnson, Program Coordinator with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, also working on behalf of the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources on the Restoration Evaluation Program for Legacy Fund Projects. With me this morning is Gina Quirum, Evaluation Specialist. Council staff asked Gina and I to speak this morning about our 2019 report and our specific focus on stream restorations over this past year. You'll find that report and a link to our website in your meeting materials. I'm going to start with a brief overview of our charge, purpose, and process, and provide three stories regarding Outdoor Heritage funded stream projects around the state. Then Gina is going to hand off, or I will hand off to Gina, and continue with some of the findings from our stream evaluations and recommendations for improvement from our panel and a few take-home messages specific to stream evaluations. So since restoration evaluations began back in 2012, we have visited 164 legacy-funded restorations and enhancements around the state in all habitat types. 81 of those have been Outdoor Heritage Fund projects. Our pool of projects to potentially look at is large and diverse, and with more than 5,900 projects reported complete to date across the three funds that we work with. This also includes Clean Water Fund and Parks and Trails Fund. These projects, of course, vary in scale and complexity from small private shorelines to several thousand acres of grassland habitat. Project managers also range from local fish and game clubs to federal and local governments. Quickly, our mandate directed to DNR and Bowser in Statute 97A.056, Subdivision 10, is to seat a panel of restoration experts to evaluate a selection of restoration enhancement projects relative to their stated goals, application of current science, and to identify problems with implementation and make recommendations for improving future restorations. Our program is not designed to provide long-term monitoring for these projects or really to quantify the overall habitat benefits to the state from any of these funds. Our direction and our focus is really looking at a subset of the projects and working with our panel to highlight what is working and promote their recommendations for improving future practices. Our process involves contacting project managers to collect their project data, then coordinating a field visit with them and the manager and our site assessors, who then complete our standard evaluation form, Our season of field evaluations is then brought back to our panel for review. Folks who we have actually out in the field doing our assessment work are both contracted professionals and state staff. There's a pie of the breakdown of who all those folks are. About a third of our assessors are state staff, and about two-thirds are contract. When we are looking at state projects, whether it be DNR or other projects where we're potentially directly involved, we're always contracting that assessment to an outside party to avoid any possible conflicts of interest. Our panel, as directed in the statute, has 5 to 6 members, including representation from DNR and Bowser, U of M or Minsky system, and options for federal LGU members, all with expertise relative to the projects being evaluated. Our current panel, you'll see up there, are 6 members from this past year. Starting on the left side, Greg Berg from Stearns SWCD, Susan Gladowicz from the University of Minnesota on the top there. Greg and Sue have been on the panel all the way since 2012 when we started. It's great to have that continuity. On the bottom there in the blue shirt, Dan Shaw from Board of Water and Soil Resources, plant ecologist. Holding the sturgeon there, Jameson Wendell, fishery supervisor, stream supervisor for Minnesota DNR. In the red shirt down there, Jess Kozarek, fluvial researcher with St. Anthony Falls Laboratory at the University of Minnesota. And on the right, Dr. Joe Magner from the University of Minnesota Biosystems Engineering. Three folks on the right there were on our panel this past year for having some particular areas of expertise related to stream restoration practices. So after our panel provides their comments and recommendations, we consolidate and synthesize all of this information in our report that you'll see there and is in your meeting materials and other focused communications to help share the successes and challenges and what we're learning from implementing restorations across the state in hopes that we will learn and help improve our future restorations. The photo there is one venue that we target for communicating our program recommendations. This is this past year's Prairie Field Day out in southwestern Minnesota, where practitioners from all organizations around the state, NGOs and LGUs, convene in the field really to discuss their practices on the ground. So these are great opportunities for us to try to communicate what we see happening out in the field. So as I mentioned, this past year, based on interest from the council and others, we focused entirely on stream restorations. We've reviewed entirely stream restoration projects this past year across all 3 funds that we work with. And combining this past year's evaluations with stream evaluations since 2012, we've seen 63 stream projects overall total and revisited 7 of those. And that encompasses 31 different project manager organizations. And you can see the dots on the map there indicating both which fund and where those projects are located throughout the state. So you can see we're getting a fairly wide swath of projects throughout the state. Just to give you a sense of what some of these projects look like specific to Outdoor Heritage Fund, I'll give a couple examples of projects that we've looked at. This is the Rat Root River up in Kuching County, Kuching SWCD's project, working with the local Rainy Lake sport fishing. Any of you that are familiar with the area would know Rainy Lake was historically a very robust walleye fishery that declined significantly in the early mid 20th century. So the projects that were done there using Outdoor Heritage Funds, you know, were primarily focused on restoring that walleye fishery and spawning habitat by removing fish barriers and making some water quality improvements and really doing some structural work in the streams to provide better spawning beds. And this work is really seeing a lot of monitoring, and we're getting a good sense from project managers, you know, how they're tracking, how they can gauge the success of those projects specifically to improve habitat up there. Another project way out in Wilkin County, this was one, TU was the listed project manager, receiving out to heritage funds, certainly a lot of local DNR folks involved in the design and planning on this one. This was restoring a spring-fed prairie stream out on the prairie, a fairly rare cold water fishery out there. Goes directly through Atherton, WMA, created an entirely new meandering channel through the WMA and worked around the historic ditches that Lawndale Creek had been put into around that WMA property for many, many years. And monitoring has shown really substantial responses across a gamut of biological indicators, including the fish. And naturally reproducing brook trout. Another project up on the North Shore, just up above Duluth, Knowlton Creek. This is one that was done immediately in response to the floods of 2012 up there, where water came rushing down the hill, shallow bedrock. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the area. It was really designed with those extreme precipitation events in mind, and a lot of infrastructure and habitat considerations put in, and the way that work was done, stabilizing that natural stream and, you know, providing some additional off-channel pools for habitat. One of the great pieces of this was the partnerships between the Outdoor Heritage funding coming from the St. Louis estuary work, you know, moving upstream a little bit up the hill and partnering with the local LGUs to really work this habitat project into the infrastructure needs and trying to gauge the future of what future potential extreme precipitation events might bring and how that really works in a multifunctional landscape, going through the ski hill, coming down the road and dealing with road passage and still providing a high quality habitat in there. And with that, I'm going to hand off to Gina. I will stop sharing and she will give you some of our findings from this past year.
Thank you, Wade. Good morning, Chair and Council members. Gina Quirum, Restoration Evaluation Specialist with the Minnesota DNR, also working on behalf of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. So as Wade said, I'm going to focus for the rest of our time today on the bigger picture, what the panel has seen and what they've been talking about when they step back and think about all of these projects as an aggregate. What's working? Where are there opportunities to improve? And how do we continue to maximize habitat benefits out of these legacy dollars? So the next slide I'm going to show you is three pie charts that relate back to that statute charge that Wade mentioned. When we go out and look at projects, we focus on projects and if they're meeting their stated goals, utilizing current science, and if there are any problems with implementation. Could somebody please confirm if you do see pie charts now or if we're still seeing Wade's screen? Okay, we're good. Thank you, Mark. So these three pie charts have a lot of information and they represent all of the habitat projects that we've looked at over the course of the program. Essentially, when you see a blue piece of a pie, things are going well. Projects are fully utilizing current science, being implemented without problems, and meeting or even exceeding the goals that they set out to accomplish. The green pies are places where there's area for improvement. And that is really where the panel starts their discussion of these projects. Where do we see opportunities to improve the utilization of these funds? Specifically related to stream projects, the panel noted that there's potentially more opportunity to improve in the categories of current science and problems with implementation. So they had extensive discussions and came up with some recommendations on how to more fully implement current science and avoid problems with STREAM projects, with the ultimate idea that doing that would better allow projects to meet and exceed their goals. So I'm going to summarize those discussions for you in the next couple slides. Related to application of current science, the panel really focused on three opportunities here. First, ensuring that project goals align with the design to maximize both habitat and clean water benefits. These are very complex systems, and they do not exist in isolation. They exist in a larger watershed context. And so the design and alignment with goals is critical. They also talked extensively about diverse native vegetation, and that all of these projects to have longevity and sustainable benefits require a well-established diverse native vegetation, and that that vegetation needs to be appropriate to the specific sites. They also identified some opportunity to ensure that restoration techniques are executed using best practices. And here, one of the recommendations that they had is to continue to have construction oversight and peer-to-peer training for new practitioners. Thinking about ways to avoid problems with implementation, again, they identified three specific themes here. Making sure that there is enough detail in restoration plans so that actions can be implemented as desired. They really focused in, again, on having experienced experts provide construction oversight. For some of these projects, it's necessary to do some field fitting and some adjustments as installation is happening. So you need to have those experienced and trained eyes on the site. And then finally for this one, sufficient treatment of invasive species during site preparation is an opportunity they saw. Invasive species are a ubiquitous part of a lot of the landscapes that these projects are occurring in and can affect the long-term outcomes. So those are opportunities that the panel saw for improvement. They also spent a good deal of time talking about common factors of success for projects that are meeting or achieving their goals. And there were a number of common factors that they focused on, starting from the planning phase of a project all the way through after a project's completed and maintaining long-term benefits. The next series of slides that we have for you today are going to outline those factors of success, and then I'll show you them all together in an infographic. So again, these are common characteristics that the panel saw in successful stream restoration projects, and they emphasize that incorporating these characteristics into future projects will help improve restoration and maximize habitat benefits for Minnesotans. So in the planning phase, when you're making a plan, they acknowledged that successful projects really identified the root cause of problems. They had clear and common goals among stakeholders, and they had community support and buy-in for the project before it was started. In designing the projects, the panel also identified that bringing diverse sets of voices and professional perspectives to the table was very important, and that these diverse teams need to collaborate and get feedback throughout the design process and then get all of those details down on paper. For STREAM projects in particular, these teams, the expertise it takes is very diverse and includes expertise in geomorphology, hydrology, ecology, engineering science, among others. They also focused on common factors of success in implementing the work, getting the work done on the ground. So again, hiring trained, experienced professionals and then having that construction oversight guiding installation is critical. And then collaborating with the team if the plan changes. These are very dynamic landscapes, and it is not uncommon to have to adapt a plan as you're implementing it, but going back to that team and having those conversations is something the panel saw a lot of benefit in. Once projects are completed, they also saw some commonalities in projects that were able to maintain benefits. Having someone in charge of monitoring and having that person have the resources they need to respond if a response is warranted is really important. They also identified that people need to have the time to do the monitoring, and this needs to be part of a typical workflow. And we did see this happening for a number of projects that we looked at. And then finally, moving forward, there's more than 10 years left of legacy funding for these habitat projects. And to maximize benefits for stream projects, they emphasize that we need to continue to evaluate what's working. Stream restoration science is a fairly young science. And so continuing to understand what's working and collaborating with practitioners is important. They also emphasize the need to share stories of successes and challenges, and then adjust our expectations and our practices as we learn. So this two-page spread in the report contains all of these factors of success in kind of the arc of a stream project. The last thing that we're going to present today is some take-home messages that the panel emphasized in thinking about these opportunities for improvement and factors of success specific to stream projects, because there was a lot of interest in what are the big picture take-home messages that we can learn from looking at all of this work. So here are the four that the panel emphasized. One thing we noted is that we went into this endeavor hearing from some folks that stream projects are not as successful as other habitat restoration projects. And this is not what we saw. Stream projects in the state are meeting or exceeding their goals just as often as non-stream projects. But the panel did note that the consequences of failure can be more significant, you know, specifically when there are projects that involve infrastructure or are near homes or other structures that are potentially at risk if a project does fail. The panel also did note that maintenance and repair capacity is less certain for stream projects. And I'd like to explain what that means. So when we're out working with project managers and looking at their work, one of the things we talk about is where would resources come from if maintenance was necessary? For stream projects, there was less certainty from project managers exactly where that money would come from. This doesn't mean that maintenance and repair is not happening. We saw several good examples of people being able to mobilize and proactively work to maintain habitat benefits, but it's not always clear where those resources would come from. And then lastly, stream findings from all of these projects, all 63, continue to underscore the value of the recommendations the panel has made over the last 8 years. And you can find those recommendations in the report that's linked in your meeting materials. With that, we would be happy to stand for questions.
Great. Are there any questions that members have? Or staff members? Ron?
Yes, thank you. I have a question, and that is, did they find any pattern of failures among identified with certain groups who were accepting the stream improvement money? Or were some of the failures just spread among whatever, or were there... Was there a pattern of failure among certain groups who were doing this work?
I'm happy to take that, Chair Hartwell, Member Schauer, and Council members. In terms of the kind of the snapshot that we had of projects, I would say that there are not patterns amongst groups. And I mean, I can go into more detail about where there may be issues, but in terms of patterns amongst groups or organizations or even types of project managers, that's nothing that we saw.
So just to follow up on that, since we've paid for this evaluation, are we going to get the results of where you saw a problem, which project managers created the problems? We're about to go into a process of allocating future monies. or recommending future monies, it would be helpful to know where we have folks doing restoration. That there were three categories: they meet, they have room for improvement, or they don't meet, which was a small sliver. It would be helpful for us to know who's doing good work and who has issues that we ought to probe a little more.
Yeah, Chair Hartwell, council members. So all of the evaluations are available and you're welcome to look at those. They're in the appendix to the report. If you follow that to the back, those are all available via that link. It's I think 600 and some pages this year because we add in a lot of excerpts from budget plans and images that really add up. So they're all in there. And we'd be happy to, you know, consolidate that information further. But in terms of, I think to Member Shara's question, in terms of identifying any particular group or even type or set of organizations, that wasn't anything that was would be correlated or anything that we could, you know, particularly point to out of those evaluations. I think that our takeaways for going through a good deliberate decision-making process based on the goals of the project and the specifics of that project site are really the takeaways there. It's just a matter of having an organization that is prepared and ideally experienced in being able to have those type of engaged considerations and decision-making processes, both with their partners and internally, to make good decisions. And I, you know, not to get into the subjective here, in my purview of looking at out there, heritage-funded project managers that are doing stream work, they have that.
So just a follow-up question, what about non-stream work? And it would be very helpful to see a list of where there were concerns and who had those concerns so you can go to the 600-page report without having to piece through it page by page. But you looked at many other projects in forests and prairies and savannas. I think the council would be interested in knowing where we had any issues. So as we see people applying again, we can question that. If you could get that to us in a summary form so we can refer to the report, that would be great. So
Chair Hartwell, council members, I'll jump in if you don't mind, Wade. As Wade has alluded to, there really wasn't a pattern where we were seeing consistently the same project manager or the same project type or location was having problems, but rather kind of categories of challenges that people face that are, you know, sometimes expected in some of these projects because landscapes are so dynamic and there's just some uncertainties, but some things can be planned for. So we could certainly provide those categories, and I think that might help kind of target some of the questions that council members might want to ask of project proposers if that information is of interest to you.
I think anything would be helpful, and if it isn't enough, we'll ask for more. Ron, you have a question.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman Hartwell. Part of your presentation, you used the magical phrase called best practices, which can be, as we found out on a tour down in southeast Minnesota, a very subjective phrase. What is best practices for one organization is not for another or other experts. I realize that is still a subjective topic. I guess what I'm hoping for is that voices who don't think that, for example, DNR is using woody stabilization for bank stabilization, there are better things to do, that their voices are heard or even given consideration or actually changed. I know that's not part of your duties here, but that is not a question, perhaps just a statement. One thing I was looking for is have the different parties set up a structure so they can discuss these projects and decide how it should be done.
Wade or Gina, do you have a response? Wade, you're on mute.
Yep. Oh, yep, there you go. Chair Hartwell, Member Shara, and council members, in terms of, pointing to specific practices, any of the practices that we've seen implemented, there's a large toolbox of practices that can be implemented. And, as we were saying, I think that at the end of the day, it's more about, is there a clear and deliberate process of decision-making for what practices are being employed based on the goals and the specific site conditions that you're managing? Any one material, we've seen all different sets of materials and tools in the toolboxes employed and done well all throughout the state. So it's not that one is necessarily better than another in terms of a material or a particular practice. It's a matter of just being sensitive to the site conditions and knowing your site and knowing what's going to be durable and provide the goals that you're looking for. So, it's much more about the process and decision making and knowing what the tools in the toolbox are and when to employ them and how to utilize them, all together to make a successful project. I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah.
Mark, you had something, and then Ashley.
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Wade and Gina, within your findings, are you within your findings and suggestions for changes, are you finding that those are being well received by project managers and the professionals out in the field, or are there areas of that that are maybe less well received and that you it may raise some concern for you?
Chair and council members, thank you for that question. We have been communicating these results to project partners for all of 2020, and overall, I would say that the information has been very well received. One of the first things that we did is presented this information at the Upper Midwest Stream Restoration Symposium in Stillwater earlier this year, and had really great conversations with project partners where they were on board with supporting the recommendations, and a lot of them were already trying to implement them and were happy to see support for the things that they were trying to do on the ground. Wade, would you add anything to that?
All right, Ashley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I really appreciate this report. It's really well put together, easy to read. And thank you for being here and giving this presentation. I want to get a better understanding of maybe what you're hearing or seeing related to reproduction rates or populations of fish or mussels or other species that folks are monitoring. It can take a few years for some of these projects to really show results. So especially with some of the earlier projects, I'm just hoping to hear a little bit more about what you're getting in terms of the populations and the results in that sense. I didn't see as much in terms of what you're defining as successful as being seeing those results. So I just want to hear a little bit more about that so that I'm clear on that.
Chair Hartwell and council members, I would maybe jump in and piggyback on some information about the Rat Root River project as an example of the type of monitoring information we're seeing. Wade mentioned that project was one aimed at restoring a walleye fishery up there, and they did kind of a three-phased approach where they opened up access for spawning, did some stabilization to improve water quality, and then installed spawning beds in riffles. And the groups up there that are collaborating, the SWCD, the Rainy Lake Sports Fishing Club, and the DNR, are monitoring those spawning beds. They have confirmed that there is a lot of egg laying happening on all of those spawning beds, and they're really excited about that, but they're taking it one step further and wanting to confirm that those eggs are hatching and that fry success is also something that's occurring, because ultimately, you know, you need success through all the life stages to get the fish. And as you mentioned, Ashley, it takes a while for some of these longer term biological changes to happen, but that's an example of a project where monitoring is happening and they're really being targeted to make sure that they're getting those changes that they want in the fish system before they continue to put more money into projects.
Chair and council members, I'll add on to that. From our perspective, we're not doing that biological monitoring, you know, in our evaluation. So we're information that we might have in that regard, we're dependent on the project managers to be collecting that as part of their monitoring. And it varies to the level or extent that that information exists. So we're not always able to say, and often we and sometimes project managers are in a position of saying or restoring to the extent of this structure is the habitat suitability for these species, and providing that habitat suitability is maybe the best indicator that we can have in the absence of more detailed monitoring information, which would be ideal. Gina gave a great example of the Rat Root River. The other project example I showed today on Lawndale Creek out in Wilton County has a pretty substantial amount of biological monitoring, not just of the fisheries, but other biological indicators and invertebrates and mussels on the site that have really responded positively post-restoration. And they had good pre-monitoring on many of those indicators prior. So in the places where that monitoring has been done, it looks good. We don't always have it.
So Ashley, does that answer your question?
Yeah, and I understand that this is, that folks are doing the best they can related to what they can see on projects. I'm trying to learn a little bit more about what we can look for as we evaluate projects, and as we're reading through projects. And so any additional thoughts you have on that is great, but for now, that answers my question. Thank you.
So you have recommendations for improvement. What are you going to give the council so that as we're looking at projects, we can keep in mind any issues that might be there that we should be probing and ensuring are in accomplishment plans? What do we learn out of this beyond generally you're thinking things are doing are we don't have a huge issue out there? But specifically, what are you going to give us that will make us better at what we're doing?
Chair Hartwell and council members, if you don't mind, Wade, I'll jump in on that one. So I think one of the things I would point to that you have right now is that the report. We did not talk about specific individual recommendations that are detailed in that report, and they start on page 10 of that report. And the first two are specific to streams. And I would point to those as examples of things to look for in projects. So the first one is improved planning for stream projects. And in that text, it talks about some of the things to look for that would be part of that planning process. When project partners are talking about identifying the underlying problems, the specific stressors in a system, you know, you want to see clearly articulated specific project goals and these other kind of bullets in that recommendation would be things to look for when evaluating projects potentially, as the panels identified it. The other recommendation specific to streams that the panels really emphasized this year is focusing on well-established native vegetation. So this would be another place that the council could go to get some more specific information, and it's presented in a way that's meant to be digestible and able to translate into a variety of projects. Wade, would you add anything to that?
So, Chair and Council members, thank you, Gina. I think that that's, you know, generally where I would go with that question in terms of the recommendations that we put forward are, I would say, primarily focused towards project managers, those implementing the work. But there is certainly a role both for funding councils and for the state agencies in sort of vetting the process and, you know, kind of that frontline initial review of projects coming forward. You know, often the catch-22 is the amount of information about a project when it comes to the table for money. And then secondarily, even if that information were provided in great detail, the capacity of the funding organizations to really vet that in detail. So I think, you know, what you're looking for is more of a higher level indicators of what, you know, questions could be posed to project managers. And I would echo what Gina said in terms of, are they, in terms of the areas that the panel has identified over these past years and we have wrapped into those recommendations, are they kind of fulfilling that? Do they have a track record of providing documentation that's adequate to follow through on, you know, planning and implementing a project? Have they engaged enough or are they involved in training in various capacities, you know, through their organization or their staff? Are they incorporating additional project partners? One of the recommendations for improved project teams, and that came out of looking at projects that were really maybe had a certain set of expertise applied to them, but maybe they could have used a plant ecologist, you know, in that project team to better inform that, you know, some of the design decisions that were made. So I think that I would certainly, you know, point to those recommendations that are standing as kind of a framework of some of the areas that we have seen and looked at it in a proactive, positive manner. Where can we make improvements and how can people avoid these things in the future? And that's where those recommendations spawn out of. So, yeah, that they're an organization that has a track record of being able to think broadly and deliberately about the decisions that are being made and that they're implementing good work. And that's not to delimit folks who are maybe new or newer to the game, but it's knowing that they have the toolbox at hand to be able to fulfill a good project, I guess is my response to that.
Any other questions? If not, thank you. Appreciate the report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Muting and unmuting, isn't this fun? Next on our agenda is a discussion about a request for an amendment with a project approved in 2019 with the Conservation Fund. Mark, do you want to set the stage for this?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, a lot of the time amendments come in and staff is able to administratively approve or deny them. This is one of those amendments that really changes something or requests for a review of the council because of the implications, so maybe I should say behind it. The Conservation Fund and Emily is here, along with some folks from Crow Wing County Land Services, as well as their Environmental Services Supervisor, I think maybe even a board member from the county board up there. We'll let them speak in a moment. We wanted this to come before the council because it talks about trails on the lands that would be acquired and then turned over to the county. The county had kind of a novel approach or different request regarding no net gain of trails on these properties. And I think because of in the past where we had the Mississippi Northwoods property and there was the trails discussion with that raised its head a few times with us, we thought this was best to come again before the council. I know the council has had numerous conversations on trails in the past, and there are feelings across the board about trails, not just tote roads, but also hunter walking trails and also ATV trails and snowmobile trails. There's a whole gamut of trail potentials and that different council members have different feelings on. And I know that each of you are very cognizant of the fact that the council's job is to think about habitat. And of course, the impact the trails has upon that. So that's kind of why we wanted this to come before the council. With that, maybe we'll turn it over to Emily so she can give a presentation on what we're asking for.
Thank you, Chair Hartwell and Mark. That was a great overview of why we would like to come before the council this morning. Again, my name is Emily Nelson. I work for the Conservation Fund as the Minnesota representative. And yes, we do have four other people on the call. I'll give you a quick overview and rundown of who they are. We have Kim Burns Melhus, who is the Minnesota State Director for the Conservation Fund. We have Gary Griffin, who's the Land Services Director for Crow Wing County. Ryan Simonson, who's the Environmental Supervisor for Crow Wing County. And the Crow Wing County Commissioner, Steve Barrows. And I'll let people at the end, if they want to add anything after the presentation, any of those four folks, and they're available for questions as well. So the Conservation Fund, we are requesting an amendment to the trail language in the Protecting Strategic Forest Lands Near Camp Ripley grant, which was awarded July of 2019 in the amount of $3.3 million, which is all detailed in the memo that was sent out in the meeting packet. So just to step back and give a little history here. So in March of this year, the Conservation Fund, we entered into a purchase agreement with Potlatch to acquire 1,546 acres in both Cass and Crow Wing counties that would be owned by multiple partners, including Crow Wing County. And if you, Potlatch, just a little background again, they own tens of thousands of acres of forest lands across northern Minnesota that is typically really intertwined with state and county managed forests. So these basically would align very well with existing managed forests for public lands. So the lands in Crow Wing County were identified with the county staff as a priority for forestry habitat purposes at the outset of the project when we applied for the grant back in 2018. And so fast forward a little bit from March, so June 9th of this year, before our anticipated closing with Potlatch, the Conservation Fund joined county staff for a presentation to the Crow Wing County Board. And the board, well, because the board would need to approve the donation of the 350 acres from the Conservation Fund, which would be owned in fee and managed by Crow Wing County as part of their county forest lands. So at that meeting, the county board decided to table the motion to approve the donation that day until more clarity was received around the possibility of realigning existing trails in the future, if the need ever occurred. So after that board meeting, we, the Conservation Fund, we were able to negotiate delaying the closing with Potlatch on these Crow Wing County properties until more clarity around possible future trail realignment could be determined. And we were able to close on the remaining 1,196 acres in that transaction on June 30th with other partners as planned, which that included the City of Baxter, Sylvan Township, and Cass County. So at this point, to explain some possible scenarios that may be addressed by the proposed amendment, I'm going to let Ryan Simonson introduce himself and provide some further clarity from the county's perspective. And I think, Ryan, if you want to, you might be able to share your screen if you'd like to do that.
Thank you, Emily. And good morning, everyone. And, you know, first of all, thank you all very much for allowing us to attend this meeting and listen to our proposal and our ideas. So we'll see what happens. And so you might ask, why are we proposing this? And Emily kind of laid that out. We don't have any plans right now or even in the future for trails on any of these properties. We just don't know what might come down the road, whether it's a year or a decade or, you know, even longer from now, if a club would like to propose a trail or a reroute on some of these properties. And we would just like some flexibility to work with that club to make that happen, if it makes sense. And so our proposal is, instead of a blanket, no new trails on these lands, we would like to have a no net gain of new trails. And so, you know, what do we mean by no net gain? Well, there's a whole bunch of examples and scenarios, but if a club, say, were to propose to create 500 feet of new trail on a property, we would plant 500 feet of existing trail to trees, for example. Essentially, if we create new trail, every foot of trail that was created, we would, you know, plant or reclaim, rehabilitate that same area to trees. And there's, I believe Emily submitted a whole bunch of different scenarios and items, you know, that could come from this, but we think the no net gain is a potential compromise to allow us some more flexibility in managing the property while essentially not having any kind of impact with trails on the property. So that's really all I have. I guess just would open it up for questions and discussion.
Are there questions? Denny.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to weigh in and say that I think it's reasonable that we would allow someone that has a Lessard Sands easement, or I should say more like a county-owned property, to be able to move a trail. And it would be my interpretation that no new trails would allow realignment, especially in the case sometimes it will probably be environmentally a big step forward to realign the trail, as maybe a stream changes or we find too much traffic in a wet spot. So I guess it wouldn't have been my thoughts that no new trails meant that they were not able to realign. I guess to clarify, we would have to be careful that the restoration that take place, we maybe follow some DNR standards for the restoration of the trail, so we don't end up with that trail staying open. Maybe it needs to be marked, et cetera. But I would think a realignment or a movement would not be, and I would agree with the county's proposal that, or the Conservation Fund's proposal seems reasonable. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, Dan Fabian here. Can you hear me, Dave?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. you know, for us in northern Minnesota, trails are becoming more and more, I'll say, important to people's outdoor experience. And I would certainly support, you know, this change, this proposed change. I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with the no net gain portion of this, because there may be a very, very good reason for not closing another 500 feet or whatever the numbers are. But I am very interested in trying to move something like this forward, especially in light of, you know, we are protecting thousands of acres, and what I'm growing more and more concerned about is we're doing all this work, but yet we are excluding a significant portion of the population, those people with severe mobility issues that are not being able to take advantage of and enjoy a lot of these properties. And folks, we have to continue moving the ball on this issue. And I think that trails are a very, very important part of any of this, so that we allow people the ability to be able to enjoy these properties more. So in general, I like this, but I'm not sure that the no net gain is necessary, and I don't know if that can be amended out or not.
Other questions?
And if these lands are going to be a part of the forest management in Crow Wing County, well, forest management means they're going to be doing some logging eventually and so forth, and that's going to require, you know, some roads and so forth too. So, I understand both sides of the issue here, but I hope that we can grant their request and maybe even give them a little more flexibility if that's desired. Thank you.
Are there other questions or comments? Yeah, Ron.
Well, you and I, David, we've been involved in all kinds of trail discussions now for many, many years. Look, this is a slippery slope, and I don't have a solution for it, because we don't want to turn these forests into raceways. On the other hand, as Representative Fabian mentioned, a lot of people enjoy trails. We need trails for forest management. And I will say this. There is a wildlife habitat component in trails. There's an edge effect, you plant clover there. So a trail does not mean a destruction of wildlife habitat. I'll just say that. I don't have an answer here, but I think maybe, I don't know if we should maybe require a trail plan by the folks asking for these. And for these projects, a trail plan. So because we're trying to stay in the middle here somehow, but there's no direct way forward that I can see at the moment.
Mark?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, I don't know if this would be, I'll open it up for Mr. Simonson, Mr. Burrows, or Mr. Griffin, whoever is most appropriate to answer this, but just a question with future management. As these lands would be turned over to the county, they'd be managed as county forest lands, and in that capacity, you'd be having, you know, their tote roads on the properties for doing continued forest management. How would you, I'm thinking you may have a tote roads right now that haven't been used for, you know, 20 years, they're pretty well grown in, but 10, so if you have a ATV trail or a snowmobile trail is proposed and you decommission those and restore those, one of those tote roads back to trees to allow this no net gain for a recreational type use trail or more recreational type use trail, how would you ensure that you're not cutting off your nose to spite your face, so to speak? In other words, you're not getting rid of a tote road that you may need 10 years from now when you're ready to harvest again.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. That's a really good question, and you know, frankly, full disclosure, to be honest, the county would prefer to actually not have the to be able to manage these lands just like the rest of the county lands, the rest of our forest lands. We thought the no net gain of new trails would be a good compromise between no new trails ever in the future, and you know, it would allow us some flexibility if we need to, you know, develop a trail that we could reclaim a trail. But we would certainly, that certainly could be an issue. You know, with the no net gain policy, if there's, let's say 500 feet of new, of existing trail on a parcel and a club wants to develop 1,000 feet, well, we simply couldn't do that because it wouldn't fit with the no net gain. So, yeah, there it's not a perfect solution by any means. We just thought it would be a step in the the right direction.
Denny?
So,
Mr. Chair, I just want to make the point to Director Johnson's point about logging. I would consider any creation of logging roads and the temporary easements and such normal forestry practices, and we would certainly expect that to happen and be allowed. They got to drive semis with pulp trucks and skidders and all that stuff in, and they've got to create temporary access. That's not the creation of a permanent trail in my mind. There's standard practices to restore that back, and if they need to post it or whatever, but I guess I would want to put on the record that we assume that when it becomes county forest, the county will be able to use their standard forestry practices to access and to log it as such. And as Member Scher has reported, the trails, I just think, Ron, just to lighten it up here a little bit, just recently, you know, where I saw the pheasant broods on the two-track feeding on the bugs that were present on the two-track trail. So there's a lot of benefit in it for sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Ron?
Yeah, I would say, David, that there really are two trails. There's trails that are used for forest management. They should not be part of this discussion. I think what we're talking about are trails for recreation only, and sometimes they're not the same. A trail for snowmobiling or ATV may not have anything to do with accessing woods for forest management. So maybe we have to define the fact that we're more concerned about recreational trails and not forest management trails, because they're different, and one is necessary, as Mr. McNamara said. So that's a consideration.
So my concern with this is there is no definition of what is a trail today. So we don't know if you're going to go back historically for 50 years and look at old logging roads and column trails. I can't support this unless it is absolutely clear there are this many feet of trail that exist today, and there won't be more than that. And I don't see that in this proposal. So I do not believe we should be, this proposal came to us with the express, we won't create new trails, and now you want to create new trails. We better define exactly what's there in terms of trail footage today, so it never exceeds that under your proposal, because we don't have any insight as to what you consider a trail today. And until that's the case, I cannot support this. Mark Holstein.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of coming at this from a different perspective, in a longer term management perspective. You know, the reality is the council's only got a shelf life of 10 more years without a reauthorization of the council. So who's going to be the one looking out, administering or regulating this language that we're proposing? I kind of get lost in that long-term perspective of how does this move forward? And some of it comes back from my years at the DNR and looking at all of the different patchwork of different regulations that are continually wanting to come onto that landscape, but yet we have these land managers. We have these processes that have been set up, whether it's within the DNR in trail management or forest management. The county has their own. And then overlaying it, I know Crow Wing County is a third-party certified forest management. That brings in a whole third-tier level of eyes looking at how the county manages the land. And with that recreational benefit and that forest management benefit, I'm concerned the council is stepping. I understand the passion in wanting to get in there and control it and regulate it, but we've got this, how many acres is this piece? I don't even know. In this piece in question, and how it relates to the bigger picture, this patchwork postage stamp set of regulations that we're trying to, that people want to put on the landscape is going to create this huge administrative struggle and stress for future managers, that these processes, I think, are already there to manage it. And I'm concerned that with each time we try to throw in a piece of language to regulate this acquisition or regulate that acquisition or dive onto this piece. I mean, let's break this off into a completely different direction. The issue of WMAs, and are we going to allow mowing? Are we going to allow grazing on the WMAs that we purchase as the council? Are we going to dive into that science? Or are we going to allow the land managers and the citizens around them, who are the voices that we're entrusting, the science, the scientists and the managers, to make those decisions and let the decision makers in the future make those calls? I want to make sure that as a council, we're staying in the big picture of what we're here to do, and that's in the conservation of land. And we have to, at some point, turn that management over to somebody that we trust.
Okay, I think the answer to that is, I don't know that there's an answer, but in terms of who will enforce it, it falls to the state of Minnesota to enforce if someone finds a violation in the future. And the method for doing that is certainly cloudy, but probably involves citizens and the attorney general and the courts, should it get to that. But Jamie, you have a comment.
Yes, thank you. Similar to what Representative Fabian just mentioned, I would also support the removal of the no net gain portion of the language. Reason being, to what Mark was saying, not creating more of an administrative burden and allowing the flexibility so that everything is under the third party forestry certification, and understand that we haven't defined it, but allowing for the management of the property, utilizing some of the partnerships with in the forestry business as well as in the grazing business, so that these properties are managed in the future without creating more overhead for the Department of Natural Resources or whatever group it would be, looking more in the future for management of these properties with those types of partnerships, I would favor more. And so I think taking out that no net gain and supporting this revision is something that I would do.
Okay, Kerry Griffin, you have a comment?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I want to first say, if you think of counties as a partner, when we talk about a reroute of a trail, not only sometimes would it enhance the land that potentially was secured with Lessard Sam's dollars, oftentimes it affects, hundreds of acres around it. And our guiding principles are forest management, wildlife habitat, and recreation third. And we manage kind of in that order. We definitely understand and the conundrum of, I agree, I don't know if anybody on this call is looking to make these forested or natural areas into racetracks. But we also know that hopefully we could have that flexibility to do proper management with our guiding principles of forest management, of course, wildlife, which I think align well with this council. In addition to that, being able to balance the more and more growing concern and need potentially with outdoor recreation. I don't want to bring it up, but you know, in the midst of this pandemic, the right thing is let's get more people outside, you know, and trails is a great way to do it, and do it in a way that we continue to protect this natural resource so that we haven't impaired that wildlife habitat for future generations. That was my comment. Thank you.
Are there other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Dan Fabian. So if the discussion is done, what is your plan with this particular item? Is this something we're going to vote on, obviously?
Yeah, they have asked for approval of an amendment. And so it would be up to us to put an amendment forth and vote yay or nay.
Yep, okay. So to Member Swenson's, and I don't want to jump in ahead of her, but Member Swenson, I would encourage you to make an oral amendment to remove the no net gain portion of this. And if you don't want to do that, I would be happy to do that.
Sure, I would definitely make that amendment to the motion.
Does that need a second, Mr. Chair? If it does, I'll second that.
Well, we don't take seconds, and there is no motion to approve anything at this point.
Okay, thank you. I'll wait for the appropriate, well, we will wait for the appropriate time.
So if there are no more questions or comments, I guess the question is, does someone want to make a motion?
I will work on that. Let's see. Help me out here, David. So I'll make a motion to accept the amendment to the accomplishment plan with the amendment to remove the no net gain component of the proposal or something along those lines.
Staff, can you figure that out?
Mr. Chair and members, this is Joe. Could we say something that new trails would be or could be developed in the future in accordance with the county's forestry management practices or whatever the forestry management document is that the county follows?
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that.
So is that your motion?
Yes.
All right. Is there discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair, I just have a question.
Yeah.
Specifically to Crow Wing County, I don't know what their trail management program is. I don't know if they're in an open and less closed or a closed and less open. That's just a clarification that I guess I would really like to hear.
Yes, Mark, we are open unless posted closed.
Jamie, Becker Finn?
Yeah, just wondering, and this is probably a question for Mark, Mark Johnson. Have we done this before where we default to whatever a county's position is on something like this? Is this pretty unique to have that kind of language?
Mr. Chair and Representative Becker Finn, actually, under the current accomplishment plan, the land would be managed as county forest property. So within that, that would cover that they already have proposal or have their procedures within their county forest land management that cover trails. And as Mr. Simons had mentioned, that's basically the trails are open unless posted closed. I can't, I'm not thinking of a time in the past when we've had, we've changed things to a great extent. And I guess with that, thinking about that, I'm wondering if not passing, not approving the amendment actually does the same thing as the as is tried to be done with the motion right now. If it just reverts the all decisions here back to the county's forest land management practices. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. And I guess, you know, that sort of brings up the issue. I think when you take out the no net gain language as well, I'm not really sure what this accomplishes or if it even changes very much. And if it's even necessary.
Danny?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the one point I would want to still make, and I'm fine if we were to put the no net, take the no net gain out of it, which would allow potentially the county to create new trails. The creation of new trails, generally speaking, wouldn't be consistent with Lassard Sam's outdoor heritage of why we bought the land. So I think it would be pretty limited, their ability to create new trails. Just for the sake of an ATV trail. It could be a number of issues that would allow that creation that would be positive for the environment. So I think just our guiding principles in state law would dictate how they do that. But because this is Lassard Sam's land, there is specific language that would dictate that it would not be a free-for-all. I don't want people to think that's what we would be creating here in this. And thank you.
Joe, you had a comment?
Mr. Chair and members, to follow up on Representative Becker Finn's question, if property goes to, let's say, the DNR for WMAs, we don't have any other restrictions on them other than they need to manage their properties as WMAs. And the other issue that I would bring up is that actually right now in the accomplishment plan it says that no new trails will be developed, and so that I think the issue here is that the county is not comfortable with that language. So some language needs to be changed, and we can remove the no net gain portion, but it still doesn't say how new trails would be created in the future. So I think we'd still want to put something in that amendment to include that.
Jamie?
Yeah, I guess with that, I think that I'm not sure why we need to do this right now when we don't have a trail proposal in front of us. I think the devil would really be in the details. And sort of, I think, to what I think Chair Hartwell said earlier, when we don't have a definition of what a trail is or what it means to, and then really because no new trails are planned, we would be, I think, opening the door to some future definition of what a trail is. And so I would prefer that, you know, if there is an actual plan for a trail, that is when this would be brought forward. I'm just not sure what the urgency is to do this right now when we don't actually have anything in front of us.
Yeah, in my mind, you know, we were told there weren't going to be any new trails. And so this is a big change. But it's a change without definition. And I think before we approve this, if we would, we have to create that definition. Otherwise, we can't predict in 50 years what the county is going to see as a viable use of their forest lands. And we could see the racetrack out there because they could change their mind. And we don't want to allow that. We have the opportunity to control it by creating definition now. And that would make sense for us to do. But Mark, you have a comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just from a strictly a clarity standpoint here, the removing the way the wording is in the amendment right now, in the amendment to the accomplishment plan, removing the no net gain of new trails, would it muddy, or what do I want to say? It really doesn't, pretty much negates the amendment, and it may create some unintended consequences. Under the current accomplishment plan, with the county managing trails as within their procedures for managing their county forest lands, if the county wanted to put in a motorized or a recreational trail, they still would come before the council to ask permission for that. If they were doing trail restructuring or something from a forestry standpoint, again, with forestry and habitat being their primary objective with it, they could go ahead and do that. That's just the way it's set up right now. I'm wondering if it may be best from a clarity standpoint for the motion to be withdrawn and for the amendment to be voted down. I'm not suggesting to vote down the amendment. I'm just suggesting that if you don't want the no net gain component, then I would think the most clear point for everything would be to vote down the current or vote not to approve the current amendment. And then we could work with county, work with the conservation fund to, you know, provide some more language if that's requested by the council.
Emily?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, when we're filling out the accomplishment plan amendments, to Joe's point, the will new trails or roads be developed or improved as a result of the OHF acquisition? It's a checkbox on the form. And if you check, it's currently checked no. If you check yes, it pops up with almost those definition boxes of describe the types of trails or roads and the allowable uses. So just from a standpoint of changing anything, that would, it's currently at no. If to change it to yes, that would be the amendment change, I think, on the table if you remove the no net gain language.
Denny?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would want to make the point, I wonder if any of this is actually necessary, if the county and the Conservation Fund could get a clarity from Lessard Sams here that realignment, movement of a trail for different reasons, I think generally speaking environmental, to make a better bridge or to make a better culvert, that may mean that an existing 220-foot trail becomes 278 feet because they've got to go around a wet spot. I think understanding staff has the flexibility and the council has the flexibility to approve those now. So really the no net is not there. I think all the existing law and guidance for Lessard Sams is there. I'm wondering if the council just needs to clarify with the county and Conservation Fund that we're not saying you can't move a trail no matter what. It's the creation of a significant motorized trail that's not allowed. The creation of a new motorized trail blazing through some new property, or to create that kind of a trail after you did logging, you know, to make all the logging, the temporary easement logging roads, permanent ATV trails would not be consistent with our guidelines. So I'm not sure that any of this is actually necessary if we gave the Conservation Fund and the county an opportunity to understand, I think, what actually our meaning is, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
So we have a motion on the table from Jamie. We've had discussion questioning whether or not the motion makes any sense. Jamie, I'm going to give you the opportunity to withdraw your motion if you choose to, or replace it with something else should you choose to, before we go any
further. Mr. Chair?
Let me let Jamie speak first, and then you, Dan.
Yeah, okay.
Just a clarification from the Conservation Fund. Is I should have probably asked this before, but is there some language there that you'd recommend if we took out the no net gain, as far as what Joe had proposed with within the county's plan?
Mr. Chair and members, I think what Joe suggested would work as far as the conversations that we've had with the county. I think that checkbox, will new trails or roads be developed or improved as a result? Just having it as no, I believe, raised a concern from the county. And Ryan, you can answer that, or Gary, just to have that be no in the accomplishment plan was the conversation point.
Okay, thank you. And then just a clarification from staff. If a property, especially one that's this size, is has a plan for maintenance with forestry purposes, are other proposers checking no, or are they checking yes? Was there just an error in the checkbox because it always had the intent to be managed for forestry?
I guess that was part of the confusing part. The question, will new trails or roads be developed or improved as a result of the OHF acquisition? I guess the answer is really no. We don't have any plans or for trails as a result of this acquisition. The issue is more in the future, the what ifs, the unknowns. We'd like to be able to manage the lands according to our county forest resources plan and our county comprehensive recreation trails plan. So that's kind of the plan, but there is a little bit of confusion there in that language.
Dan, I know you had a comment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to be clear, the comment was made, I believe, by Conservation Fund that they've been negotiating with the county on this. Are the county and the Conservation Fund on the same page? I mean, do they come at this from the same direction, or are they coming at it from opposite directions or something like that? I just get the feeling that maybe there's a conflict here between the Conservation Fund and the county. And I'd just like some clarity on that from both sides, both parties.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, so at the beginning of the project, we met with Ryan and with Gary to go over their plans for the county, and rolled out a big map, and we really selected the best lands that would fit for what they would like to see in the future, and that was back in 2018. And Ryan and Gary, you can jump in and give any meat on the bones there if you'd like.
Yeah, Emily, that's correct. Representative Fabian, we're absolutely on the same page this whole way. And any questions in particular about issues that you noticed, or?
So, Mr. Chair, to that point, I'm not sure. I mean, I like the idea of what we're doing here, and I like Jamie's amendment to this. But I'm not sure that we're in the right place at this point to make this decision. And maybe it's something that needs to be tabled and we bring it back. I'm just not sure. If we move forward, I'm going to vote for the resolution as amended, but we'll see.
Mark?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, back to Jamie's question. Jamie, in the current accomplishment plan, it states there are trails on the property and the existing routes on the potential project parcels will be developed for timber harvest and management purposes. In addition, forest-related activities, these routes are used by hunters and other recreation and others for recreation, and some of that will also include ATV travel. And then it asks, are there, or how will they be maintained? And it says those trails, the county land department and the state agencies will maintain and monitor these trails and roads under respective forest certification standards. Temporary tote roads will be developed pursuant to county forest management plans. I hope that answers your question.
Jamie?
Yep, thank you. Let's see. So how about this? If I make a change to my motion to, my motion would be to table this and have the Conservation Fund work with staff on language that can be brought forward to us with the, as we were speaking about the no net gain in the county's plans, and then we can do a vote at the next meeting.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, real quick.
Yeah.
Jamie, would your motion also include working with Crow Wing County and not just the Conservation Fund?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yep.
So you're offering a motion to table and let staff work with the county and the Conservation Fund to come back with better language, removing your old motion, correct?
Correct.
Mark, is that appropriate procedure? I'm a little foggy as to how I best handle this. And
yeah. Mr. Chair, Jamie is removing her or withdrawing her original motion and replacing it with another motion. That's appropriate, as I understand. For one note of clarity, Member Swanson, you had mentioned coming back to the next council meeting. Could I just suggest that be a future council meeting, because our next one is September and that's the hearings?
Yes, thank you, Mark.
Okay. So do we have to vote on the tabling of the issue, Mark? Is that appropriate? No. Yes? No?
That's a good question. Maybe Mr. Knopf or Mr. Stanley could chime in.
Yeah, that would be great. Greg?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Ben, this is Ben Stanley. I think the person who offered the motion can just withdraw the motion and you would not need to take a vote.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is, Jamie, your willingness to withdraw the motion with a direction to staff to work it out and bring it back at a future meeting. Is that correct, Jamie?
Correct.
Okay. Are there any, Denny, you have a comment here. Go ahead.
Just real quick, Mr. Chair, I think one of the options would be that staff, the Conservation Fund, and the county work it all out within the existing framework that we have, and there's no need for an amendment. Thank you.
All right, any other comments on this issue? Emily.
Chair?
Yes.
Hi, this is Kim Burns with the Conservation Fund, and I just wanted to make a comment that in this discussion as to some of the questions that were raised as to the timing on this. We're dealing with a seller right now that basically has reluctantly agreed to extend the purchase option on this for 1 month till the end of August. And after that, they have the option of not extending the purchase option. So the timing on this is really critical in terms of the council's involvement, in that you have a seller that will not extend beyond August, and after that they have the option of taking this land back and selling it on the open market. So the land would potentially be lost to the county.
Emily?
That was my comment too, thank you.
Jamie?
Now knowing that, could you share a little, I mean, is the seller needing this language?
The seller is not needing any language. They are wanting to move to closing. The county, the Crow Wing County board has decided to table the issue until this council meeting. After the council meeting, yay or nay, that would go back to Crow Wing County Board. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan or Gary. And then once the county decides yes or no, then, you know, they would have to decide that before the end of August is when our purchase agreement would expire.
So I think what you've heard, the county has heard it directly, as has the Conservation Fund. There's a willingness on the council's part to work something out, but not an unlimited, you can do anything you want. You have to create some definition and a direction to staff to work that out. I don't know that we can do any better than that, and the county and the Conservation Fund is going to have to decide what they want to do. Gary, you have a comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wanting to ensure everybody's understanding that while I heard, you know, no net gain wasn't potentially the best solution, and maybe when I was listening to Mr. McNamara, that there's potentially no need for this. Our understanding, based off of past dealings with this council, is very strict and stringent willingness, if you will, to allow different trails on this type of property. And so with that original language that we proposed, we were literally just looking to ensure we have the ability to do the reroutes if needed. And quite frankly, if needed is probably a slim window. And the benefit in like this here with the time sensitivity is better forest management, I believe, of that property. If long-term goals met with, of course, our guiding principles. But to Mr. Hartwell, Chair, no net gain, while maybe not the best definition, still to me it was fairly clear that if we have a mile of trail, we want to add a mile of trail, you got to take a mile of trail away. And do it in a way that we're going to enhance the wildlife habitat. And so I get this has really got muddled, and I apologize for that. I would still support or ask you to consider the no net gain language that Jamie Swinson had proposed early on for better clarity for our board at this time. I don't know if Steve, our county commissioner, wanted to say anything or not to that, but I think that's where we're at with the county, just trying to ensure we can do that. Again, maybe we're confused that we can, maybe we need to bring that back to our decision makers, but I think we were looking for ensuring that we could do some of that on a very limited basis.
Steve?
Mr. Chair and Council, as a voice of one on a board, I know that I don't speak for the other four, but I do want to say that my perception and what I gained out of the purchase or the potential purchase of this property is that we want to be good partners with the council and what their direction is for the use of this property. I think we've laid out the plan that we've got a prioritization in place that puts recreation at the back of the list. However, it is important in our county, because of the dependence on recreational opportunities, that be considered. But trying to do the no net gain was to show that we're trying to be a good partner and yet utilize that property to the best ability that we can. We don't want to go back and have a situation like we did in previous years, but that we want to be able to move forward and respect what you folks want and how you want us to utilize that property within the scope of what our management plan is. So I think that was our only intent. I don't think it was to try to define anything permanently, and perhaps the definition could be refined going forward. But I think because of the time sensitivity at this point, the no net gain proposal is one to help everybody understand that we want to be a good partner in the utilization of this property. Thank you.
So, Steve, let me just ask a question. Based on the conversation and the willingness to work something out in the future, and I think you've heard from everyone a willingness to figure out how to do this that doesn't leave the property exposed to unintended consequences in the future. Do you think you and your fellow commissioners would have confidence in working with us that we will work this out in the future, whether it's under what exists or something that we have to modify? Or are you going to say no and the purchase goes away if we don't take action today?
My fear is that the purchase would go away, Mr. Chair, but I also think that there is a willingness by this board, which is a different makeup, and of course we know every election can change the makeup of any of our boards, and so we are in an election year, but the current board has the appetite to work with the council and I think would take the time to redefine or define more definitively what they expect. But I think that it's important that you know that we're willing to do that. And that's really what we were trying to get at with the no net gain. And I think it's, in terms of trails, it was only the connectivity and respect of the environment that we might have to, you know, whether it's a wetland or something that we need to go around, but it was just to make the trails connect, not to create, you know, super highways on these properties, and not certainly to create racetracks that utilize more acreage than what's already on that property. So, but I do think there is an appetite with this board makeup to be a good partner in developing that definition as we go forward.
So, Council, what would you like to do? Mark?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I can just, I'll just read you the amendment to the accomplishment plan, and that way, while everybody thinks about this a little bit more. So under the position, will new trails or roads be developed or improved as a result of the OHF acquisition? Previously, it said no. This amendment would cross that out, would say yes, and then it would, under description of types of trails and roads to be and allowable uses, it would add in, no new trails are planned for the development at this time or in the future. If a new trail is developed in the future, the county will ensure no net gain of new trails occur on the property. Allowable uses would be motorized and non-motorized use unless posted closed. It also adds in under how will maintenance and monitoring be accomplished? They add in the wording, management of the property will be for forested wildlife habitat and forestry purposes. The property will be managed to strict environmental standards under third party forest certification. That is the amendment before us, which there's no motion to pass it at this point.
Once again, does someone want to do something or are we just going to move on? Ron?
Well, I think I will make a motion to pass that, although, again, we are talking about trails for everything. And we don't define the difference between a trail for forestry work and trails for recreation. I would love it if the no net was for recreation trails and we let the county foresters do their thing, making tote roads as many as they damn well please. But without that being said, I don't want to lose that property. You got to trust the county. The county should trust us. So I would consider making a motion to do the amendment as Mark just read it.
Sorry, you're not considering making a motion. You're actually making a motion, correct, Ron?
All right, I'll make the motion as Mark read the amendment.
Is there any discussion? I would, Ron, ask if you would make a clarification, which is the amendment is for this particular property only, not for the entire appropriation. And all the other property that already has been purchased and negotiated transfer under the existing accomplishment plan, where there were no issues with not building new roads. Would you consider that as a friendly amendment, Ron?
Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion? Denny.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Commissioner Barrels for being here and clarifying that in an election year, when you're one of five, you can't speak for all five. I think going forward, I'm fine with doing this so that we don't lose this property, and I'm glad we specified it's only for this property. But I think let's get clarified in our processes, and I think this wouldn't have been necessary, that folks would have known realignment, movement of trails is not the creation of new trails. So by the check of that box, we're not allowing them to wide open build whatever trails they want, which in normal county forest practices in a county marked open, and like Crow Wing County is, that it's open unless marked closed. That's why we got to this position we're in. So I just think going forward, maybe staff could clarify what that actually means by checking that box, and I don't think we'd be here. But in this case, I'm fine with the motion. Thank you.
Let's do a vote.
All right. Hartwell.
I'm going to vote no, only because I believe we should define in advance what is the length of existing trails, and so that we know what we're signing up for. I'm uncomfortable not having definition up front. I'm sympathetic to the position and certainly don't have problems with realignment, but I think we need to have more definition before we approve something like this.
Hartwell votes no.
Mr. Chair, just one second. Are we voting on the amendment to the amendment now? The amendment that you offered?
I believe Ron accepted it as a friendly amendment, so it's part incorporated into his amendment.
All right. Just one thing I'm going to add. This, I think we kind of went down the rabbit hole here for the last 2 hours this morning on this topic, but just remember this is one specific circumstance with one specific project, one specific county, that all those things being said could be reversed at any given point in time that this council sees fit. They were asking us to do something that it was very finite, very easy to do, I think. I'm okay with the amendment to the amendment. I think this is a pretty easy fix for us. And if we don't like what they do, we can come back and say, you know, after the project is started or after the conservation efforts have begun, we can still go back and say, listen, you're not following our guidance the way that we set forth. And these are outside the limits from what we were talking about. So just remember that as this goes forward.
Okay, Amanda, continue.
Shara.
Yes.
Shara votes aye. Representative Becker Finn.
No.
Becker Finn votes no. Eggerling.
No.
Eggerling votes no. Representative Fabian.
Fabian votes aye.
Fabian votes aye. Holston.
Aye.
Holston votes aye. Senator Lang.
Aye.
Lang votes aye. McNamara.
Aye.
McNamara votes aye. Peters.
No.
Peters votes no. Saxhog. Saxhog.
Tom, you need to unmute.
Every vote. Aye.
Saxhog votes aye. Swenson.
Aye.
Swenson votes aye. And I believe we lost Senator Tomassoni. So. Seven ayes, four noes, one not present.
Motion passes. Thank you all for a good discussion. Something we can think about how we manage proactively in the future so we don't have these discussions again. With that, we'll move on to agenda item number 8, the proposals for our hearings. There are four areas to discuss, sort of generally how we do the whole process in terms of having proactive discussions with each other before we do our allocation, as Ron and I have advocated for. The whole issue of roving crews, who we're going to invite to the hearings, and what the format will be. I'd like to perhaps handle roving crews first and turn it over to Joe to give us a little more information. I am guessing, since I struggled a little bit in reading all of the proposals, ferreting out what proposals had roving crews and what the shift to a roving crew only proposal would look like to take them out of the other proposals, and what the meaning would be to us in terms of how we do that. And I've asked staff to try to create some clarity around that. And I think Joe is going to walk us through that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We also have Kelly Wilder from DNR on the call as well, who can also provide some clarity. In the proposals this year, there were A and B proposals. Let me look here on the A. On the A side, The A side was with roving crews, and the B side was without. And so the proposals that originally DNR has been proposing for the last few years includes roving crew work plus other work. So that's could be contract work, could be other type of habitat enhancement or restoration. And every year the DNR tries to balance the need of roving crews plus the other work. And it got to be to a point where it was really hard following the roving crews and who was doing what, when they were doing it, how much money they had, for how many years, for what crews. There's five or six crews throughout the state. And so this was an attempt by DNR to make it more simple, that if you like the roving crew model, you can just fund one proposal that will fund all of the roving crews for a certain number of of years. Usually it's either, well, it can be either from 1 to 3 years. And, but if you don't like that model, they still wanted to have the option to do it the way they have been doing. And so that's why you see two sets of proposals, one with roving crew and one without, because there is, in addition to the roving crews, they do want to do other types of work besides the roving crews, if that makes sense. And so DNR is here and they can actually talk about the funding mechanism and the years and how they've been doing it over the past few years of the 1 to 2 or 3 year cycles to keep all the roving crews employed. So I hope that makes sense, that it was a way to make it simpler, that if people like the roving crew model, they could just fund one project that would cover the entire state instead of having to fund multiple projects with different types of roving crews. And so maybe Kelly can talk about that further.
Yeah, Kelly, please enlighten everyone. Make it simple.
Good morning, Chair, members. I appreciate you having us on. I also have Greg Hoke on, who's more familiar with some of the details of the operations and budgets, and so I can call on him too. Because this is, I'll just say we are really excited about putting this consolidated proposal forward and being able to build on the conversation that Bob Welsh and others had with you in January. And we're really thankful to Chair Hartwell and Vice Chair Shara for having these conversations with us over the past few months. I should say too, I'm sorry to introduce myself. My role with DNR is as the liaison, the agency's liaison to the council. And I sit in the Fish and Wildlife Division. So a couple of things that we were aiming to accomplish with this consolidated proposal that we put in front of you, in addition to our traditional proposals, are that we hope it provides more stability to the roving crews instead of so many different parts and pieces. And to that point, reduces the complexity as well because of the success of the roving crews and adding more crews and more members. They were getting very complex to propose to you all and then to manage once we were awarded the proposals. And then another big goal is to have the crews able to work on different habitat types over the years of their appropriations. And so we see that as a benefit too, and something that can ameliorate what sounded like somewhat of a misunderstanding about how limited we were keeping them in terms of geography and habitat type. So if it's okay, Chair Hartwell, I would see what questions staff or members have that I could narrow in on, either myself or Greg.
I think one question everyone is thinking, and I'll articulate it for them, and maybe I'm the only one, but I don't think so, is how does this play out in terms of if we make this shift, existing funding versus future funding, what's the request year by year look like? I know you prepared a chart for when you think you'd need to be asking for funds, but I wonder if you can share that with everyone now, maybe on your screen, share it with the council so that everyone is clear on that. It was kind of buried in the information.
Yes, Chair, thank you. So the part of this equation that we think there will be more coordination needed on is what we do with existing funds if we transition to this new model. But in terms of what that request would look like going forward, I do have a document that I would need to take a minute to pull up, but I can see if Greg wants to jump in at all, and otherwise it'll just take me a minute to pull that up. Greg, would you like to jump in at all there?
Yeah, I can. So yeah, this is Greg Hoke, Minnesota DNR Prairie Habitat Supervisor. First off, can everybody hear me? Okay, thank you, Joe.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. So I think Kelly explained fairly well. Yeah, kind of the one, the issues hanging out there, which we kind of had in that Gantt chart on page 3 of the handout attached to this meeting is, you know, we do these in three, we fund these roving crews basically in 3-year chunks that are staggered. So there is money out there right now that is allocated to roving crews that has not been spent. So one of the questions then is there's kind of two options there, is we could take that kind of what I'll call the unspent roving crew money and return it. We could also repurpose that money. The way the current grassland and wetland enhancement appropriations are, it's the mix of basically contracts and supply work with the roving crew work. So we could either give the money back, or we could take the unspent roving crew money and basically repurpose it with some amendments and such to do more contract work. So yeah, those would be kind of the two very general options.
And I'm going to guess that if we go forward with this new strategy, the idea of giving money back and reauthorizing it is less desirable than working through amendments to make this a seamless process. And I'm seeing a couple people nod, so shake your head if you don't think that's a good idea. I'm not seeing any heads being shaken. So Kelly, do you have the thing yet, the schedule? I think Kelly's still working on it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't want to show you the wrong numbers. So, and I didn't have it up as something that we submitted for this meeting. So I can keep working on something I can pull up on my screen to show the annual requests. Chair, but I need another minute.
Okay. Are there other questions or comments from the council as she looks? Ron, do you have any thoughts?
Well, no, David, you and I have been talking with DNR about this. It just simply makes sense to me to have the roving crews be able to take on any project that comes up with a budget that fits it all. It just makes common sense to me.
Mark, you referenced the schedule when I talked to you yesterday. Can you find it faster than Kelly can find it?
Actually, I think Kelly is looking for actual dollar figures, correct?
Oh,
Kelly?
Okay.
And that said, members, just the reason for bringing this into the discussion right now is kind of to give everybody a little bit of insight on why we had actually 5 different proposals that in one way or another had roving crews in them for the hearings. So this actually, the discussion today might streamline our hearings quite a bit with regards to those.
And I'll just add a little bit here. I know, well, perhaps one source of confusion is, unfortunately, it's an apples and oranges, maybe in bananas, comparison to what we've been doing to what we're proposing here. So it's really hard to compare dollar for dollar between one request and another. So in the past, the grassland enhancement proposal has included 3/4 of the roving crew plus contract work. The wetland enhancement proposals have included 1/4 of the roving crews, as well as wetland enhancement work, as well as support for the shallow lakes and small wetlands program. And those have been for 3 years. We initially usually ask for 5, but it usually gets broken or cut down to 3. What we're proposing here is fully funding all 5 crews off of one. So it's if you start to try to compare dollar for dollar across appropriations or across years, it becomes very, very challenging. And I have a bunch of very ugly spreadsheets to prove that.
David, you have to unmute.
Okay, so I shared on my screen, sorry about that, the what was in our materials, which sort of shows a little bit of this information, but not enough to make it crystal clear, which is what Kelly's looking for and maybe won't find for this meeting. I apologize for not being clear that it would have been helpful to have this at this meeting, and we may just have to go forward and talk about it when we hear proposals. Is that what you're thinking, Kelly, right now?
Yeah, I apologize, Chair. I don't, as Greg referenced, I don't want to pull up the wrong spreadsheet, and I didn't have one especially prepared, but very soon after the meeting, we could provide you with something that more clearly tries to delineate how Greg characterized, I think correctly, the apples and oranges and bananas comparison.
Yeah, and essentially what we're looking for is a roughly about $4.5 million per year. And then in this proposal, what we're asking for is basically 2 years at a time. And I'll just kind of try to explain our thought processes here. So what we would like to do, and for lack of a better term, kind of have a buffer year so that we're always kind of asking 1 year in advance. So once we get into sync with the biennium, we would only be coming to you every other year, but we would be asking, at least as we're currently thinking, money for basically 2 years in a row. So year one would be this year, year two would be next year, and then we would take a year off. The idea there is it provides a little bit more stability and a little bit more planning, and also makes hiring a little easier. If we can, if we always absolutely guaranteed that we have 1 year in advance, our no proposal year would be kind of the worst case scenario that something happened with funding. We would be able to then put an application in the year three or year five to cover us. And so that's kind of the general mindset that we were coming up with. So alignment with the biennium, yeah, kind of always having that buffer or fallback year in case something happens. And then it makes it a little easier for us to do some long-term planning.
I can't unshare my screen. Amanda, if you can, thank you for unsharing my screen. We will get you the breakout of what this would look like if we were to go with this strategy. Obviously, because there is some funding already in place, the first and second year requests are not going to be as large as the requests going forward. And that's what I was hoping Kelly had magically immediately available, but didn't ask her for. So we will get you that information, and we'll have a quick discussion about this as we begin our hearings, so we know what to do with that. Does that make sense to you, Mark?
Yes, sir.
Good. So any other questions for Kelly or Greg? Denny.
Mr. Chair, I'm a little bit confused. I have always thought this and the CPL are the top two programs we fund. I really like the idea of making it all in one. Are we going to make that or have a chance to discuss that instead of hearing these separately and muddying it all up? I would like to see the proposal as one. Are we going to make that decision today, or at least vote on that decision?
We can. The dilemma is, if we made that decision and DNR then drops in the proposals their request for roving crews, and then we don't fully fund, they end up short of money to run the programs without any recourse. And so, you know, in a transition period, it becomes very challenging because there's no buffer. I'm certainly willing to entertain a motion saying that we would put this, the roving crew, in as a sort of a given before our regular allocation, based on keeping existing funding but reauthorize or reallocating it to a broader proposal through accomplishment plan amendments, and then adding to it what's necessary. If you were interested in doing that, Denny.
Mr. Chair, I can make that motion. That would be fine if you want that in a motion. I want to give them the flexibility to, their name is roving crews. We should allow them to rove.
Yeah, I mean, the council talked about this, which is why Ron and I had the discussion with staff, with the DNR, to come to you with this. We're facing sort of this struggle of transition and how to best handle it without putting the roving crews at any risk. But if you would like to make that motion, what would be the amount that we would be talking about for the first year allocation? For your request this year, giving consideration for what you already have in the bank and are likely to be able to spend. Greg or Kelly or Mark, do you have that number?
Yeah, we haven't crunched those numbers. So yeah, currently I'm looking at my proposal, and it's 9.06 million. That we are proposing. Yeah, we have not done the mathematical exercise as far as recouping those unspent dollars from current and repurposing those. Because they're split over multiple appropriations, that would take a little bit of mathematics, but we could do that and get back to you. Like I said, or alternatively, that money could just be repurposed to contract work, and then we just kind of start fresh with this roving crew model moving forward.
I would think, given we're not likely to have as much money in the bank this year for allocation, we're not going to want to fully fund something this year when there's already money in the bank. But Mark, you had a comment?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, in the hearings, we're looking at, in our tentative schedules for the hearings, we're looking at having the roving crews kind of on the front end. So at the some of the very first ones. So it might be good if staff works with DNR, we just crunch the they crunch the numbers, and we have that discussion right at the front end of our hearings.
Danny? Denny?
Mr. Chair, basically, I just was what Mark said would work just fine. I mean, the reality, if we said, you know, that we're expecting them to bring a hearing and look for $7 million in new money for a couple of years funding, but I would leave it up to DNR to bring a number forward at that time. But I like the idea of doing it on the front end. I think a bigger discussion is, are we willing to commit that we do it as one thing and not that piecemeal approach?
So thus far, no one has objected to doing it as one thing in all of our discussions. So if someone has a problem with that, you know, this would be a great time to bring that up Otherwise, we'll just direct staff to work with DNR and bring us the numbers for the front end of our hearings. Hearing nothing, that's what we'll do. So Kelly and Greg, thank you. We look forward to hearing from you in a few weeks.
Thank you, Chair. Yes.
Yep. So the next question is sort of, what do we have as a hearing format? You know, our options are probably four that I have heard. One is to just have the hearings in person. One is to have a hybrid model where some people are in person and some people are remote. One is to be completely remote, and one is to just do nothing because it's too difficult and put off any decisions and not allocate any money this year and let it accumulate so that next year we have double the money. Those are the four suggestions that have come to me. I have some thoughts, but I would like to open it up to the council for discussion as to what you think we're going to do. I will say, if we did this as a remote or a hybrid system, one of the things that LCCMR did is they cut their proposals from 20 minutes to 15 minutes, which seemed to work fairly well for them. It would take, if we did that, two very long in-person days or Zoom days or hybrid, or four versus five Zoom alone type meetings. So we're really looking at based on the 20-minute model, a 2.5 day or 5 day, five half day sessions, a 15-minute model, we're looking at 2 days and four half days. So with that, I will be very interested in everyone's perspective. Who wants to talk? Denny? Denny, you're on mute.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, for always butting in, but having just sat through the LCCMR meetings as a member of that commission, it went extremely well for somebody who, like all of us, doesn't like Zoom meetings. They were 15 minutes long, as you said, and we ran ahead of schedule. That's got 17 members. There tends to be many more questions there than with this 12-member council. I think that 15 minutes would be more than enough. That was what LCCMR did. I wouldn't be surprised if here you could do it in 10 or 12 and it would move forward. One thing that worked quite well, amazingly, was they did not allow the participants to offer PowerPoints. Some did share their screen, and that worked. It worked very well, Mr. Chair. I was amazed. And you are allowed to go back if you wanna, because it's on Facebook, and you can go back and find it, and then they post them the next day. So if you happen to miss one or want to review it, it's real easy to do. I got to say, they went extremely well, Mr. Chair. They were five to 6 hours long with one 15-minute break, and generally speaking, they ended somewhere from a half hour to 45 minutes early, even in some cases after we added something to the agenda.
And that was, Denny, just to clarify, that was completely Zoom or a hybrid?
Mr. Chair, it was all Zoom. Everybody was Zoom. Members, presenters, LCCMR staff, it went unbelievably well. I would have never guessed that it could have went so well. I actually, truthfully, I think if we did it I'm not sure you'll ever go back to meeting in person. That was my reaction. I actually got more out of it. I thought I would have never guessed it.
Tom, do you have something, Tom, or are you just waving at us?
I got to unmute. There, I unmuted. Well, I would think that I'm glad to take that testimony from Denny, because if kind of our sister organization had a good experience, I think we ought to think about that pretty seriously. I think this coronavirus is not going away. It probably will only get worse in the next 6 weeks, and so we probably ought to use some degree of conservatism on this.
Jamie?
Yeah, I guess this is sort of in support of what Denny was saying as well. You know, we've been able to have, I think, a 7-hour public safety hearing in the legislature. You know, we've been able to completely run our legislative meetings and pass bills off the House floor and, you know, get a lot done via Zoom. And obviously it's not ideal. It's the same kind of conversation I'm having with my kids with distance learning, and you know, none of these are great options. None of us want to be doing it necessarily this way, but I think that keeping the safety of folks in mind, and especially if we've got presenters from all over the state, it just makes no sense to me during a pandemic to gather folks in the same space. And I watched some of the LCCMR hearings, and from an outsider, I felt like it was actually a little bit easier to follow along because there wasn't quite as much rambling or getting off topic. They were really dedicated to getting through things. So I would support them moving it down to 15 minutes as well, and think that, you know, we can do it via Zoom and keep folks safe.
So Dan, I know this isn't what you have suggested. Do you want to say something before we take the temperature of the council?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just unmuting myself to get your attention. Well, I appreciate the comments of the other members who have found a positive experience in these Zoom things. I've not. And what we've been doing in the legislature for me doesn't serve my constituents well. We can make all kinds of claims about how we're, you know, incorporating and getting people involved and so forth, but the reality is that people are not. And I sent a letter to Amanda, and I'm not sure how that got forwarded to everybody else. I believe it was mid-July, maybe the 16th or 17th, something like that. You know, our work doesn't have to be back to the legislature until after the first of the year. I don't think that, and I'm surprised that Member McNamara's reaction to the LCCMR stuff that he did, that they had, and that's good. But I think that I would much prefer that we do in-person stuff. Everybody's been going to the grocery stores and other things, and you can mask up, and kids are going to be going back to school this fall. I think that there are plenty of spaces available in the Capitol complex that will allow us to mask up and socially distance and that sort of stuff. And for me personally, I get more out of the presentations when, you know, I can look at people's faces and ask more questions and so forth. We do face a certain amount of fiscal uncertainty at this time, obviously, with the forecast that came out recently, and then the November forecast is going to come out and give us something else to work with. I just think that we should do it in person, and I would also suggest that we delay the meetings until October or something like that, maybe even November, and we can get our work done later when we have at least more water's gone under the bridge in terms of the pandemic and all that sort of stuff. So, and I don't think I'm alone on the council. in my dislike for Zoom meetings. I don't discount the fact that they can be effective in some ways, but the reality is I think we do better work when we are in the same room, and if people choose not to be in the same room, then we could also have some sort of a digital link for them to participate. So that's where I'm at. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Others? Jamie.
Thank you. I am open, but I prefer flexibility to do some sort of hybrid model that allows participation either remotely or in person so that it serves the needs of everyone. I too favor the in-person portion of the hearings as well as the hearing about the projects. And so I would be able to be present there, but also want to have the anybody that doesn't feel comfortable to do that, to give them the option to still attend the hearing remotely or present remotely as needed.
So I think we're really talking about either a hybrid model where people are able to be in person or remote, or just a Zoom meeting alone. And maybe we could just go around the council and, you know, give your preference council member by council member, so we have a way of gauging where everybody falls on this. I can tell you, I despise Zoom meetings, but I also recognize there are a lot of people who are unable to attend the meeting either because their organizations won't let them travel to meetings and be in in-person meetings like this, or they have compromised situations. I have a grandson who has a kidney transplant, and you know, he hasn't left home since February because of this, and I understand the concern. So, you know, I am unfortunately coming to the conclusion that we probably should do it by Zoom, but I'll do whatever the council wants to do. And I would love to be there in person, but I think it's probably wiser to do it by Zoom. So that's just my personal feeling. Maybe if I can just call on people as they appear on my screen to get their sense, we can come to some sort of general consensus as to where the council's at. So Jamie, we heard from you. Do you need to say anything else?
Thank you. I also favor the 15 minutes.
Okay. Mark Holston?
Yeah, I guess I'm much like you. I would much rather be in a room with all of you and have an opportunity to see the faces, but I just think it'd be really irresponsible for us to do that. And I would have to favor the Zoom meetings and follow the calendar as we've got it generically set up.
Kristen?
I would agree with what Mark just said. And I would say 15 minutes. I'd love to be there in person, but I don't think it makes sense.
Jamie?
Just for the record, for the record, would also obviously prefer to be living during a time where it's not a pandemic and we can do things as normal, but definitely in favor of doing it via Zoom. I would not be able to participate in person.
Ron?
Well, I'm conflicted as well. I look around the country today. We're going to play football and the NFL. We have all kinds of cases where people are getting together, rodeos, whatever. But on the another side of me says a combination of Zoom or a hybrid would work for me very well, because then people who don't want to be there, who can't be there, can opt out and get to us by other means. I'd even consider postponing that although I'm not sure if that is going to give us any advantage or not, because I don't think the COVID is going to go away very soon. But here's another thought. You know, we're dealing with millions of dollars here, and I'm not totally convinced that we can make good decisions with just a Zoom format. I agree with Danny. I like to see their faces, their eyes. I like to see the additional information that they bring. Sometimes that changes my mind entirely, but under the Zoom, apparently that can't be done. So I guess I would go for a hybrid. If we can, my gosh, sit together with masks on, go to Target stores and everything else with masks on, we can sit in a room with safe distancing with masks on and get this done. So that's my thinking.
Okay, thank you. Ashley?
I'm in favor of the remote option by Zoom. What I'll add to that is I would love to hear a little bit more about options to make sure that we are accessible to the public. One of the biggest things that's missing being by Zoom is during breaks or at the end, not really having that opportunity to kind of organically interact with folks. And so I just wanted to put that in there, that if LCCMR or any of the other councils have done something that allows for a little bit more accessibility, the public to ask questions or just to meet with members, I'd love to make sure that folks feel really able to ask questions and to interact with us.
Thank you. Danny? You need to unmute, Danny.
I've already been heard from. I'm strongly in favor of it just being from Zoom. And it is on Facebook. I would suggest that we do the same. That worked good in LCCMR.
Okay. Mark. Mark Holston?
Yeah, I've already gone.
Okay, I just giving you the chance.
Yeah, no, and I guess if I had a little bit more detail on a hybrid, I'm open to that. I'm not sure I would participate any differently, but I understand connectivity isn't equal for all of us, and that is a significant problem. But if there is a hybrid option that can be developed that I can get a better understanding of, I guess I'd be willing to explore that.
All right. Andrew?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Dan, just real quickly.
Yeah, let Andrew, and then I'm coming to you next.
I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, my problem. Okay, thanks.
No, I think there's an easy way we can do this, and it's, you know, the legislature has been holding hearings, and we've been in session. We've been using the social distancing models, and the larger rooms that are available in the Senate building, I think, would be conducive to us. It could be regulated to the presenters and the council members only. So you have a very large room. You have a lot of availability for spacing in there. Also along those lines is we've also kind of done the hybrid where the Zoom people are allowed to call in if they wish to, and it's surprisingly worked pretty good. So the folks that have some of those underlying issues that they're concerned about can you know, have those addressed when you use Zoom if they want to, and the ones that are available to make it in person can do so, and it's worked out pretty well. So I think as a council, we can make that decision and go along the same routes and do it that way. That's my two cents.
All right, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my comments would be similar to Senator Lang's. We have been using a hybrid model in the legislature. There's been a number of us who've been present on the floor. Some when we've had our special sessions, if we do a hybrid, then you know, both people get what they want. If you want to be there, you can. If you don't want to be there, you don't have to be. The other thing I would interject at this point, and I favor the 15 minutes, but maybe some of the projects where we're in phase five and phase eight and so forth, we could limit their presentations even more. But I would favor the hybrid. Thank you.
And lastly, Tom.
You know, I just as soon be down there too. And if that's what we all decided on, I'd come down there without a problem. But I really do think it makes most sense to do Zoom and back to what Danny was talking about. If it's appropriate to limit the amount of minutes, 15 minutes or whatever. Thank you.
All right. So I'm hearing four people say hybrid, everybody saying they wish it was in person, except maybe Denny, who liked the format of Zoom better than in person, and the rest of us saying we ought to do it by Zoom. I'm going to take that as we ought to do it by Zoom. We can certainly take a motion, but that's everybody's had their say, and I assume that's how everyone would vote.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Isn't a hybrid Zoom? Zoom with an option of being there?
It is, but what I heard was the majority of members saying they did not believe we should do the hybrid. That we should do the entire thing by Zoom.
I guess I'm not sure I heard that. I heard an understanding that Zoom is probably the most, is maybe what I will choose for myself, but I don't understand why we would exclude a hybrid option for those who are willing to go to a facility. I don't know what harm a hybrid does.
Okay. Mark Johnson, you had a comment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of functional notes for this. First of all, the hybrid provides us with more technical challenges. In talking to the Clean Water Council staff as well as LCCMR staff, definitely is a lot more technically oriented, and there are some huge challenges with that. Doesn't mean it can't be done, but it does provide more challenges. The other thing is that there are nonprofits as well as agencies who don't allow their clients at the current time to attend in-person meetings. So they would have to attend by Zoom, and they'd have to present by Zoom or some other virtual method. And then lastly, for a hybrid model, we would need a facility where we'd have in-person for those who want to attend in-person. And we don't have a facility location yet. As far as the House and the Senate, we have not, all indications I have from them so far are that they cannot give us an approval to that at this point because of the facilities being closed to the public. They are still open to the legislature, but they're not open to the public. And this would be a publicly open meeting.
Denny?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to make the one point about the presenters. I think you would have to have the presenters present via Zoom. That is the one part that went very, very well. And as Director Johnson just said, many of them aren't even allowed to come in public. And then it really allowed the meeting to go forward or backward from a time constraint, because all they had to do was sit in the what they call the waiting room or waiting something. And then they would bounce on the screen when they were up, and you were able to move ahead if one only out of all the, and we listened to hundreds. There was two or three had technical challenges or staff had to work through, so they bounced ahead to the one forward. So I think you would have to allow the presenters to be via Zoom. I know we're talking mostly about the 12 of us, but the presenters, I don't know that would work to have them be in the room, reality wise.
So I saw Ashley or Jamie who had a hand up and then it went away. Did you mean to have a hand up?
That was me. And I was basically just going to say what Mark said. So I need to repeat that.
So maybe someone wants to make a motion. Tom? Tom, you're on mute.
Am I off now?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay. Well, for purposes of moving this thing around, I'd move that we go to mute just as that option. Simple. That everybody do mute. I'm okay. I can't hear you, David.
You said everybody do mute. Do you mean everybody do Zoom?
Yes, I did.
So is that a motion?
I make a motion everybody do Zoom.
You make a motion that the hearings be held only in Zoom.
Yep.
All right, we now have a motion. Discussion. Amanda, call the roll.
Hartwell.
Aye.
Hartwell votes aye. Shara. Shara.
Ron, you have to unmute. Okay.
France after five.
Try it again, Ron. We can't hear you. What did you say? Okay, Ron. What do you want to do, Ron? Are you in favor of Zoom only, or do you not want to do that?
I not want to do that.
Thank you.
Shara votes no. Representative Becker Finn.
Aye.
Representative Becker Finn votes aye. Eggerling.
Aye.
Eggerling votes aye. Representative Fabian.
Fabian votes no.
Fabian votes no. Holston.
I vote no.
Holston votes no. Senator Lang.
No.
Senator Lang votes no. McNamara.
Aye.
McNamara votes aye. Peters.
Yes.
Peters votes aye. Saxhog.
Aye.
Saxhog votes aye. Swenson.
No.
Swenson votes no. Tomasoni not present.
Looks like we're going to do it by Zoom.
Six aye, five no. One not present.
So, I'm sorry for those that didn't get their way. This is a very tough issue, and I recognize it's hard for all of us. This whole thing is very hard for all of us, and knowing what the right thing to do is very hard for all of us. So we will do the meetings by Zoom. I heard no negative comments to trying to go to 15 minutes. I think we will take a little extra time in the schedule just in case things run long. Mark sort of with staff mapped it out, and it looked like 8 till 12:30 would work. We'll schedule 8 till 1. We'll hopefully be under that every day. We will schedule some time at the end of each day to just debrief among ourselves about what we're thinking about the proposals that we've heard, as we've talked about. So what have I missed, Mark?
Mr. Chair, it's just now, do we want all of the presenters to come, or proposers to come in? Are there any outliers that the council feels should not be heard?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Let's go to the scoring sheet, which is the easy one is this one, which was in your packet. The scores that came in, top to bottom, were 80 points down to 63 points. There were no outliers that were really, you know, nothing was identified as having no support among council members. So my assumption is that we're going to want to hear all of these proposals. The question would be, do we want to hear a proposal for contract management and restoration evaluations, or do we want to just pass on those as we have in the past and not have specific hearings to make them present? Just a show of thumbs up or thumbs down. Thumbs up to make them present, thumbs down for not making them present. I got no ups and mostly downs, so we won't call them in. Does anyone feel differently in reviewing all the proposals that we shouldn't be listening to all of them, or are there any that you specifically would like to exclude or discuss right now? Hearing nothing, Joe.
Mr. Chair, for clarification, we had talked about the roving crew proposals and wanting to probably fund the full roving crew proposal, the 01. So if we do that, then do we not want to hear PRE 01A and WRE 01A? Because those are the ones that include the roving crews. You're on mute, Mr. Chair.
Are they exclusive roving crews?
Mr. Chair, the PRE 01B and WRE 01B are the exclusively, does not include a roving crew. So if you fund the 01 proposal, then we don't need to hear PRE 01A or WRE 01A because those have the roving crews in it. And I don't think we want to fund all three of those, because that would be three different pots of roving crew money.
So I'm going to suggest that we have that as our first discussion at the first meeting on Monday, and that we would drop hearing the other two proposals and hopefully have a shorter session if the council opts to vote in favor of that PRE1, and we would actually look for a vote as to whether or not we're going to do that after hearing that proposal, before we hear any other proposals, to give us guidance as to whether we hear those other two or not. Does that sit well with the council? Anyone object to that? All right. Any other comments, questions? Denny?
Just a format question, Mr. Chair. Would it be 5 minutes of presenter time with no PowerPoint and then 10 minutes for question?
I think that's a good rule of thumb. I think if people have PowerPoints, they ought to send them in advance to staff who can post them. But we don't want PowerPoints as part of the presentation. That was my understanding of, as to how LCCMR did it. Is that correct? Okay. Does that work for everybody? Hearing no objection, that's how we will handle it. Thank you, LCCMR, for figuring it out for us. Jamie and Mark.
Thank you. Just a point of clarification. Are we doing the 15 minutes and the 2.5 days or the 15 minutes and the 5 days?
My assumption was 4 days, but Mark just held up two fingers. Hold up two or four fingers and we'll find out very quickly. Mark Johnson saying four is the schedule, because it potentially would be very long days if we did it in 2 days. Is that okay with everyone? We do it in 4 half days?
Just to be clear, is that 4 days starting Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday?
Starting Monday. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Thank you.
And I think the way Mark had it figured, and Mark, you want to speak, but I think it's 8 to 12:30. So we'll plan, put your schedules together at 8 to 1, and we'll try to end early every day. Mark Johnson, your hand is up.
Yes, Mr. Chair, a couple things. Denny, a question for you. Was it 5 minutes presentation or was it 7.5 with LCCMR?
Mr. Chair and Executive Director Johnson, it was a 5 minute presentation by the presenters, and they generally use the whole 5 minutes, but were able to wrap it up in five. And that was to the chair's discretion. Sometimes they would let them know if they needed to go another minute or so that they were cutting into their question time. We usually did not use the whole 15 minutes. Sometimes we did and the chair kept it moving, but a lot of times we were done, and even a few times with almost no questions, but rarely that was the case.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, just to follow up with that, so everybody realizes the staff or the council members, as well as any project managers or public, on the documents that were uploaded, there were several tentative schedules. None of those will be the actual schedule in for the hearings. We will redraft the schedule. We'll do it with 15-minute format, 5-minute presentation, 10 minutes Q&A, and over 4 days starting August 31st, going through September 3rd, Thursday, September 3rd. I believe that's what I heard all the way through here.
Anyone have any disagreement with that as our strategy going forward? Otherwise, that's what we'll do. All right. Thank you all. Are there any public comments? Amanda, you know of any public comments?
Sorry, my mute was not. No, Mr. Chair members, we do not have any public comments today.
All right. In terms of public comments, staff and I talked, I can't remember if Ron and I talked, about during the hearings allowing a session for public comments at the beginning of the hearings and at the end of the hearings with people who have signed up in advance only. You can't just show up and start to make comments given the format and the difficulty of this. Is that okay with everyone? We thought doing public comments before anything got started in terms of hearing or the opportunity for it would give people, if there's something that someone wants to say about what we're going to hear, it's done before we hear it. Denny, you have a comment on that.
Mr. Chair, what LCCMR did, and it seemed to work quite successfully, is if folks wanted to advocate for a project, they could present the letter ahead of time on behalf of the project, or they were allowed to approach the presenter and be part of their 5-minute presentation if the presenter wanted them to be. So we didn't have people come online with the challenges of a Zoom meeting just to read their letter of support. They would present their letter ahead of time and it was in our packet. So we did not have public testimony about just supporting a specific project. They advocated ahead of time, or they can always email us also individually.
Is everyone okay with that as a guideline for public comment? Which means I get to cut people off if they say they're going to say one thing and they start saying something else. Thanks for giving me that responsibility. All right.
Jamie. Real quick, David, I was just going to say to that too, if staff can be really clear and we can all sort of push out on social media and through our own platforms to make sure that folks know how they can give us feedback via email, or people could comment on the Facebook page as well. That's another access point for folks to get the ability to weigh in.
Okay.
David?
Yes, Mark.
If we're done with that, I just have a generic statement to the board, to the council.
Sure.
I don't know, this was my first time going through the evaluation process and it was enlightening and I learned a lot, but I gotta tell you, I developed a real stress between projects that were conservation leases and on an intellectual side, and the tension between conservation leases and fee title, in that the stress was, I know I get more bang for the buck on a conservation lease, and do I want to maximize that? Or when I'm out in the field on a WMA and I look across the road at a rim crep sign and I can't go over there, that has an emotional stress that I feel out in the field. You know, if anyone wants to help me with that one after, send me a text, send me an email, or call me. I would love to have a conversation just about how are we going to deal with that, in my stress with that, of trying to prioritize one over the other.
Mark, I'm happy to talk to you about that. I'll give you a call.
Thank you.
Because it's real. And you're talking not conservation leases, but conservation easements.
I'm sorry, easements, yes. If I said leases, I meant easements.
Yeah. So, any other comments? I know this ran a little bit longer than we planned. I apologize for that, but thank you all for hanging in there and good discussion. Have a great rest of your day. We'll see you in a month.
Thanks, you too.